Blog Talk Radio.
This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. A little ring into the blue here. Always like our good bumper music. We got quite a collection for you guys. And, you know, one of these days I'm going to do a show where we just do some music. Kathy's done that on occasion, and I like to listen in when she does that. She gets a hankering to play some of her music. And so we'll be doing that. A little different format tonight. We are not going to have our normal reading of the news and all that kind of thing. As soon as our guest dials in, we're going to be having her on. That's going to be Dr. Rita Louise, an author of Dark Angels, An Insider's Guide to Ghost Spirits and Attached Entities. And they sent me the book to read, and I'm three-quarters through, and it's been just a really good read. And just a book that I think should be standard issue for most paranormal researchers or anybody that has any questions about what ghosts actually are and what attached entities are and the distinctions between them and the different kinds of haunts. So we're going to be getting her on here as soon as she dials in, and I think she'll be on about 8:05. And what time do we have? 8:03. We got a couple of minutes here. Some strange stuff today out in the wilds of Texas, where I hanker from. Man flies his airplane into the IRS and CIA building. Boy, let me tell you, things are a little bit weird out there, and people are getting a little strange. That's going to be the subject of our follow-on show. Kathy has graciously switched places with me today, and so we're going to be basically, I'm going to do this show 9:30, I'll be doing real quickly reconfiguring to get in and dial on and be the guest on her show as the guest co-host type of guy. And so we'll be doing that, and I'll be talking a bit about the subject of some of these things going on in the world, some of the strange stuff happening, and a little bit about a little education about where you sit in the universe and where you actually are. A lot of people don't realize, they go through their whole life and they don't realize some of the fundamental truths that are around them. With a lifetime of science behind me, I'm going to explain a few things that'll kind of help, you know, kind of put you into where you actually reside in the grand scheme of things, and then kind of tie that into some discussions about what's happening in the present day and age. I just see a lot of stuff happening, and I'll probably even have a few recommendations, and then we'll do a little bit of psychometry. Tongue's out today. Psychometry. Say the word, John. So, and yes, and for Anastasia's mother, we have Arnold Schwarzenegger's here. He's here in California, and tell your mother Anastasia that we need her to be on. Yes, and thanks, Arnie. We have Anastasia One is out there. Kathy's Distant Echoes, Damned Abodi. That's pretty good. And Disgruntled Dan, good to see you all. And for our lurkers out there, good to see you. Paul Edward Montador is out and about on a cell phone, I believe, as told to me by Anastasia in a private message. And he is going to be dialing in, I guess, through that. So we won't be able to see him. But, Paul, we're thinking about you, buddy. And I will be in contact to get you on the show. You've got some interesting things going on there. A lot of strange things happening these days. We've had some things happen here on the ranch, as I was telling Anastasia in chat. There was a I was actually in bed the other night, and I woke up to sound of a woman saying hello, and then I got up and looked around and went, what is going on? And I think that what was happening was our local female who is living here on the property, you know, the ghost on the north side of the property, is making her appearance again. So she seems to be probably wanting to get our attention, because we promised that we were going to fix up her spot. And it's getting spring-like around here. Spring is spronging, and it's getting to be ghost hunting season again. So for all you ghost hunters out there, start dusting everything off. It's getting warmer out here in California. There's definite green flowers everywhere. The trees are in bloom. I'm not surprised to see ghosts getting a little more active. Anastasia was saying, though, that there was some activity going on with regard to my particular ghost and Paul. So, Paul, I'm aware of the message, and maybe if I can get some kind of a setup going where we can talk back and forth on Skype or something like that, we need to talk, my friend, because, there's some strange things afoot here. Saw also a shadow on the back porch about 3 days before that event. So things are starting to happen around here again, and I'm not always sure why. It never follows its pattern. But I am also going to, since we're waiting on our caller to come in, and I have not seen her dial in yet, so I'm hoping that she is not a no-show, or I'm going to be winging it here. So let me see here. I'm checking the mail here. She should be dialing in any second, so we'll be just watching the lines. Anyway, we are also going to be doing a little psychometry, so I'll just go ahead and segue into that while I'm waiting. And we have in front of us an object that I have had for many years. So the psychometry we're going to do on the follow-up show is going to be centered around this object. Now, this is bigger than my hand. It actually takes a couple of hands to deal with this object. So what I'm going to do is I'll just start sending now, and I won't be asking you to take a guess as to what this is, but not yet until we get to the second show. And then what we'll do is carry on forward, and let me see here. We'll actually have you guys start guessing towards the end of the second show and see how many of you come close. So let's just say this. It's a very interesting object. It's not something that's an everyday thing, and it's all the clues I'll give you guys. No color red. Nope. Anastasia, can't guess now. You gotta tune into my energy. I'm really trying hard to send with this one, so I'm just staring at it and hope that it comes through for you. And I'm sincerely wondering about my guess. I mean, she was supposed to be on. Anyway, I'm going to go talk about her a little bit and talk about this book. And if she doesn't come in, we'll just review the book. We'll do a little psychometry and then carry on. So anyway, we have Dr. Rita Louise. Now, I first heard her on my friend's station on Anastasia saying rats. Nope, they ain't rats either. There's no rats in here. Let's see, probably a few ghost rants, but anyway, Dr. Rita Louise, a very interesting woman, very knowledgeable in her chosen field. She's a PhD. She grew up in a haunted house, much like many of us who are in the paranormal, but that's not where her interactions with ghosts and spirits and attached entities ended. At the age of 12, she became fascinated with the concept of extrasensory perception, and that's a passion which has lasted a lifetime. After years of intense study and in-depth research into the fields of health and wellness, psychology, philosophy, and the esoteric arts and sciences, she has emerged as a leading voice in the fields of holistic health and mind-body healing, and she's got quite a website set up for all that. So it would be interesting to see what she has to say about all that, because she has these courses that she teaches, whole courses on increasing your vibrational rate, things like that, getting your abilities up to par and in sort of almost a classroom setting. So it's the first time I've seen something like that. And so she really does know her stuff. Now, she's founder of the Institute of Applied Energetics, host of Just Energy Radio. And Dr. Louise is also the author of books, Dark Angels, An Insider's Guide to Ghosts, Spirits, and Attached Entities, which I've got right in front of me. Another one is called Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4. I've done that a lot. And another one's called The Power Within. So we've got that. She's also a naturopathic physician and a 20-year veteran in the human potential field. Most importantly, it's her unique gift as a medical intuitive and clairvoyant that illuminates and enlivens her work. Her unique insights bridge the worlds of science, spirit, culture, and are changing the way that the world views physical, mental, and emotional well-being. So maybe switch over here. And she's still not dialed in. We went through a lot of pain to get her on. So over the years, she's worked with countless clients who've been affected by attached entities and has helped eliminate them from their lives. She's currently a member of Metroplex Paranormal Investigations, and they're based out of Dallas, and she provides intuitive insights into the activity of suspected haunted locations. And she does a lot of what we do ourselves. Wasn't she supposed to be on Paranormal Guys, and she never called in Eek? I seem to remember that. Well, if not, then we'll just review the book, Anastasia, and you know how we do it. We always have a backup method, and I kind of had figured that if it did happen that way, what I would do would be just to review the book, and if I could get perhaps Kathy to call in, then we can go back and forth with some of the topics and go forward from there. So we can keep things going. You know, I always keep soldiering ahead no matter what. So if she does a no-show, we'll just keep on going with this. But I did read the book, and she has some interesting things to say about different types of ghosts. And there's one in here that I was intrigued with on page 43 called messenger ghosts. And those are the ones that we get that, you know, you get a type that has something to say to you, and they make quite a disturbance in some way. They try to get your attention. They knock. They bang. They'll write messages. They'll do anything they can to get your attention, to make you, you know, see the thing that they're trying to get out there. You know, for some of these, they don't get a chance to say goodbye, and you know, and that's to their family and friends. And they come in a dream state. And I don't know how many of you guys have had that happen, where somebody has passed close to you, and you basically are. You know, it's like maybe a month or two, and suddenly one of the, you know, you'll have a dream, or somebody close to you that it was close to this person who passed has a dream about them. And they'll share the most extraordinary things. And in my case, my grandmother, who died in 1995, came in about 3 months after she passed. And not a word was spoken, but it was a very strange, strange thing. What happened was she appeared like she had been in her 40s. When I was a kid, you know, and I was the first grandson in the family, and she appeared as she had been in that part of her life and looked very vibrant, healthy, had a big, big smile on her face, and she was surrounded in orange, and she was a Scottish woman, so she had flaming, you know, kind of reddish blonde hair, so it was a very striking thing, and her eyes. She had these piercing gray eyes, so she was looking at me with this really big smile and then faded out. And that's the only time I've ever had a dream like that. But to me, it was a message. And the message was that, you know, hey, I made it. and I'm A-okay. You don't have to worry about me. My mother says she does appear to her quite a bit, and I've asked Grandma to come in a bunch of times, but she has never come back to talk to me. And I always kind of feel bad about that. You know, it's I don't know if some of you have had that happen where you have somebody close like that, and you think they're going to come back, and they just don't. And it's kind of a I don't know if they're trying to tell you to buck up and just keep going on through your lesson and that you don't need them, but sometimes you do. You know, I kind of miss my grandma. So if she happens to be listening in on these shows, Grandma, stop in tonight. It should be nice to see you. You know, there's also some discussions in the book here about attached entities. And, you know, I'm three quarters of the way through, and it's, again, the pace of the book is very, very good. It's not one of those, decidedly dry things. I mean, there's a lot of humor that's sprinkled in the way she's done this. So, anyway, entities, she's going through everything from, what you talk about in terms of, quote, demon to angelic forces and everything in between. And bases everything on what she is talking about with vibrational rates of these entities. So I was reading through, and she talked about how they occupy such a they occupy like a layer of reality that we cannot see, which is obvious. But what got me thinking about the way she was talking with all of this was that the vibrational rate. Intent, it says to me that there's actually substance to a ghost, and there has to be something to be vibrating to do this. So obviously it's a different form of matter. It may be something that we don't even are even to measure at this point in time in our career, as a humanity, that we just don't understand it yet. But that is interesting. And some of you have heard the talk about somebody being actually buried or in the process of dying, and they're on a table. They're not buried yet, but they're on a table, and everything about them is measured, and their weight always seems to drop by about 22 grams. And it's been shown scientifically that this is the truth, that there is something leaves the body that in a sealed condition where there's no way anything could have escaped, they're in a tray that everything is just set so that these people are losing some sort of mass when their spirit basically leaves. So obviously there is some weight to this spirit body, and that means that there is some sort of matter involved. And that may be why they, despite the fact that they can go through walls, it probably is a little rough on them to do that. There may be interactions that are negative on them, and that's why they may choose the doors to walk through them, or walk through thinner parts of doors, or go through windows. It's just easier on them all in all. So it has to take some energy to actually be a ghost and to go through what they do. So I found her discussions on this pretty interesting. She does talk a lot about healing and the healing energies that are involved in this kind of thing. It's funny because one of the areas she covered was vortexes. And talking about vortexes, my team, we had a case that you've heard me talk about in the past, the 67th Street case in Sacramento, where we ran into, mass plus matter equals weight. Yeah, but what is this matter? Is it plasma? Is it some form of exotic matter that we've never dealt with before? It's obviously something. And, believe it or not, I believe the governments of the world and scientific communities do know way more than they're telling about this. So obviously, and the reason it's just like the UFO question, there's reasons why this is so discouraged as a topic. There's obviously way more to this than meets the eye. And maybe some people are not quite ready for it yet. Who knows? But, this whole topic of her going in and actually healing some of these places, she said something that was really interesting in the book, and I was reading last night. And many of you who use the whole notion of using sage to go in and clear a place, she said something that I really agreed with, which was that just burning sage in and of itself does nothing to clear spirits out of a place. It is a whole different topic altogether. When you burn sage, you have to have intent. And that's the whole notion behind protecting yourself and protecting those around you when you do that kind of work. So there's actually a ritual component to doing cleansing and cleansing work with spirits. So if you are just thinking that you can light a bunch of stuff and walk away and it automatically takes care of it, think again. You have to have intent. And I use that myself here on the ranch. I actually go around sometimes and actually seal the property from negative influences. And there's a way to do that. You can be taught that. Many, many people that do training in these areas. And I've done it for 20 years. And it's amazing how well it works. When things start to kind of crash through on you, and you have people coming in who into your life maybe who are dropping in unannounced, and there's forces at work trying to crash into your life, you can actually do that. You can actually go out and do your own work to basically repel that and do it in a way that's not going to be negative. A lot of people would call that spell work, or they would call it all kinds of things, ritual work, whatever you want to call it. The label isn't important. It's just the intent of bringing more positive vibrations into your life and then getting things rid of things that are more negative. So think about doing something like that. And if you get a chance, go to one of the local metaphysical groups in your area, and I think you'll find that out. Kathy here says, I've heard that evil spirits can't stand the smell of sage. I do agree, Kathy. I just think that it's funny. You'll see on some of the paranormal shows where they'll talk about people who really don't know much will go in and use sage. And, yeah, it does kind of annoy them. You know, there's something about that the sage that does kind of make them want to clear out a little bit, but it's not permanent. And one of the things I found with doing this work over the years I've done it is that you have it's not just a one-time thing when you're dealing with cleansing and clearing properties, especially those that have been haunted. You have to go in and continue doing it. It's something about every 3 months I run the cleansing on the property. Now, I'm kind of a little bit past my due date, you know, here, and so I'm actually going to go out this weekend and do some work on it. I seal the front yard, seal the back, all the entrances, go around, and it's a whole process of the mind. You don't need to have the sage if you know, it's more about the mind. There's something about mind energy, and since we possess so much as a biological entity, we can do these things. So what she talks about in this these books of hers is really right on the money. Let me see. I'm going to just flip real quick here. And we're at 8:23 past the hour. I'm watching real close to see if she got the idea that she was going to dial in at 8:30. So if she does, we're going to be real happy. Otherwise, it's going to be a long hour. What I might do, I'll tell you guys what we might do just to have a little fun. If she does not show, what I'll do is I'll reconfigure real quick, and we'll throw a song on, and then I'll put together a quick little EVP session. And I think I even have some of the EVPs from my grandfather who came through on our last show where we did some of that work. So we'll go up till 8:30, and then so if she isn't going to be in, then we'll just make the best of it, and we'll do some EVP, and I'll throw the ovulus on, and we'll have a little fun with that. So we'll go through that, and maybe and I'll even think about accelerating our game here with the thought process behind our psychometry and think there. Now, Kathy is asking a question. I've never really thought about this before, but are the spirits and senses more heightened or no? And I would tend to think that they probably are in some respects, because time is different for them. And as you see them, for example, on Ghost Adventures crew, where you've seen some of the really amazing videos of these things actually moving back and forth with extreme speed, they have just an amazing capacity to be all sorts of places at once. And I tend to think it affects their senses of what we are and how we are seen. They may not see us in the same way that you and I look at each other, we may appear to be more of a kind of light to them. And our bodies may be almost virtually invisible to them in some respects. So maybe it's our spirits that are being seen. And I see Karen has joined us. Hi, Karen. Good to see you. So I've been a bit busy. I haven't been able to call, but I wonder how your hunt went in. So I'm hoping that that went well. And let's see, we still have no guests, so I'm just going to keep flying along here. So anyway, they were talking about incubus and succubus. She had this section in there, and I was going, oh, my God, sex with ghosts. I mean, that's like, but she had a whole section on that, and there was a story in here she had of she was doing readings at a particular I'm trying to find the spot. I'll actually read this. Here we go. One man's pleasure. I have a quick and cute story about one man's reaction to a succubus in his aura. And it turns out she thinks, and I really believe this to be true, that a lot of attachments are actually tied to the person's aura and right into the chakras. So that's how attachments actually attach to you. They're actually connected to your actual spirit where you are also living. And they just, that's what a detachment means. So anyway, she was doing a reading for a middle-aged man at a psychic fair in Bellevue, Washington. And what the reading was about at this time, I couldn't tell you, but throughout our 15-minute session, I kept seeing a band of energy moving up and down and around him. I tried to ignore it, but my curiosity finally got the better of me, and I tuned in to see into what I kept seeing moving around this man's body, and it was a luscious, full-figured woman. She pressed her body firmly against him, and then she would caress and reposition herself into a seemingly sexual embrace. Had she been visible to the naked eye, I'm sure someone would have suggested they get a room. And astonished by what I saw at the end of our session, I commented on the woman who was obviously in his auric field, and with a sly sideways smile on his face, he replied, "I know, isn't it great?" And she says, "I just shook my head, rolled my eyes, and smiled." So. Hopefully, and it looks like she may have dialed in. I'm not sure which of the two 972 numbers are there. So I'm going to go ahead and see who this is from area code 972. And before we get going there, we have Anastasia, Kathy's Distant Echoes, Disgruntled Ben, Kevin's Dream, Paranormal Tunes, good to see you, and Soul Family Reunion, good to see you guys. So we're going to hit it here. And area code 972, you're on the air.
Would that be me?
That would be you.
Woohoo! It's me, Dr. Rita.
Hey, Dr. Rita, I was getting worried there. Good to have you here.
Well, good to be here.
Yeah.
Thought I was told to call in at 10:30.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because I gave it to Ira, and I was saying 8:05, so I was kind of winging it there. I was doing pretty good. I was going through your book. I read through some of the different parts of the book and was talking about some of the stuff that I really enjoyed. I'm actually 3/4 through your book, and I'm going to make this like standard reading for my team. It's so good. So,
thank you.
Yeah,
and it's done in a very fun way.
Yeah, I noticed that. I mean, and it's from your own personal experiences that are mixed in, and it's just more of a matter-of-fact style. It's not some kind of a dry thing. I mean, it's really geared to what people actually go through. And you probably heard me reading that one about the ghost that was.
Isn't that a
up.
Great story?
Oh my God! That's really common? Is that fairly common with people?
Not really that much. I mean, having an incubus or a succubus attached to you is actually pretty rare. Thank God. Or else all the psychic people in the world would be going, oh, man, I don't want to look at that.
Yeah. How does that happen? How did a guy like that get something like that attached to him? I mean, did he call it in or?
I mean, in that situation, I don't really know because, I had a 15-minute session, and the way that event was organized, I had somebody walking over to sit down in the chair right after. So I made my comment, and he went off with a smile on his face. So.
Oh, my God. Well, this whole Yeah, I mean, I did read off before you came on. I did read your whole bio, and I'm just wondering, how did it all start for you? I mean, you obviously, you know, had some. You said you grew up in a haunted home. I mean, that's probably a good place to begin.
Well, I grew up in a house that was built in 1898, and there was a full basement in the house, and no one wanted to go down into the basement. I have seven brothers and sisters, and no one wanted to go down into the basement. But, of course, that was where the spare refrigerator was and the, you know, big freezer thing and the washing machine, washer and dryer, the washer and the clothesline. We didn't have a dryer at that time. And so whenever you had to go down there, it was how fast can you make it down the stairs, do whatever you needed to do, and then get back up. And so basically we were all afraid of going into the basement. I knew that there was the dead guy that lived down there. I mean, how I knew the dead guy was there, I don't really know. You know, I mean, it was confirmed to me years later that someone had been murdered down there, supposedly. But at the time, I didn't know. And then even years and years and years after that, I made a comment about the dead guy to one of my family members, and they were like, oh, yeah, the guy in the basement. So we all knew about the dead guy, but no one talked about him.
Yeah.
And so, and what that did was, like, made me afraid of ghosts. so I am, you know, even though I'm a paranormal investigator, I am afraid of the dark and will not go into rooms by myself if it's dark, or I'll turn the lights on, and they laugh at me a lot. You know, but my interest in this whole thing really started during the 70s. There were two TV shows. One was The Amazing Kreskin, who was a mentalist and had ESP.
Oh, yeah,
and
I remember.
The other person, do you remember The Amazing Kreskin?
Oh, yeah, he's still around.
He's still around, and he's amazing. I saw him live a couple of years ago, and he was truly amazing.
Yeah.
But then there was another show called The Sixth Sense, which wasn't the movie. It was a TV series, which was about a professor of paranormal studies at a college who had ESP. And it was kind of like one of those murder shows. You know, he'd go somewhere, someone would die, and he would solve the crime using his perceptive abilities, you know, or stop somebody from getting into a car because, you know, that he perceives is going to fly off of a cliff because someone had cut their brake lines, and he stops them, and they find the brake lines cut. And I just thought that that was so great, and I just wanted to become psychic. So, see, my interest did not start with the ghost. My interest started with the whole psychic phenomena part. And so I started reading books about metaphysics, astrology, numerology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that I gleaned early on was that if you become enlightened, you get psychic abilities as a byproduct of your enlightenment. I thought that was very cool. So my goal was to become enlightened. Studied and studied and studied and studied for many, many years. Wasn't feeling particularly psychic at all. Started studying at the Berkeley Psychic Institute. Finally found a place to get some training. Studied at the Berkeley Psychic Institute. After being in their program for 3 weeks, I realized that things that I had been doing my whole life, like knowing what I'm going to get for Christmas just by picking the box up and shaking it a little bit. You know, I walked up to a gentleman that I worked with who didn't come into work one day, and the next day I just walked up to him and looked him in the face and go, well, where were you yesterday? Having them check for a brain tumor, which was where he had been the day before and why he wasn't at work. Oops.
Oh, God.
You know, little things like that. What I didn't realize was those were psychic experiences, and I had been having them all my life. But no one ever connected the dots.
Yeah, it's not a remarkable thing when you have it. It's just like it's another thought, and you have to really – it just sort of flows in there, you know? And
yeah.
You have to recognize that. It's just not a – you know, there's not a real light that hits you, you know?
But when you see things on TV, and I'm going to say kind of when you read the books, you know, they don't talk about what the experience is or what you're going to experience. And so my expectation was going to, you know, was, you know, I'd hear these trumpets from heaven, you know, or there would be this apparition that would go across the room. None of that happened. And I waited for a really long time. But one of the things that I was able to do at Berkeley was they had a house healing team. So this was before, you know, ghost hunters, and when going and doing investigations was really still relegated to college, you know, groups and really professional psychologists and parapsychologists that would go into a location. It wasn't something that the average person would participate in. And as part of the house healing team, we would go into a location, intuitively evaluate it, you know, look for vortexes, look for entities, look for ley lines, you know, anything that had to do with the property. I mean, basically anything that we detected that was out of sync in the location. And we would do a reading, quote unquote, for the homeowner, and then as part of our process, we would do a healing on that location, so a clearing on that location.
Yeah.
Well, when I finished at Berkeley, you know, having that experience, you know, there aren't a whole lot of people that understand what house healings are, and so, you know, that skill just kind of sat, you know, on a shelf for a really long time. With the emergence of all of these ghost hunting groups, it was an opportunity to take that back off the shelf and become involved once again with that kind of phenomena. With that said, in my private practice, I mean, I work as a naturopath and medical intuitive, and so I do a lot of intuitive counseling, especially on health levels. And so I, you know, would go through periods of time where I would have these people coming in that had these entities attached that were just totally controlling them in their lives. And we would, you know, have conversations about them and work on moving them back out.
And how does that, you know, that was something when I read the book, I was just, I'd always heard the word attachment, you know, and I've been doing this a lifetime myself, but you know, this is the first time I actually got a rather good schooling on what was really happening and how they were actually right in the auric field. I never really thought about it that way. So, yeah, how did you come to, you know, these understandings and what's involved in actually clearing out something like this that's an attachment?
Okay. So even though, I mean, I talk about this in the book, but the way that I became first aware of the concept of attached entities is that I had one of my own. His name was George. And I spent a very long time working on getting rid of George. And so having, you know, had that experience, it made it easier for me to understand and recognize what was going on with other people, because I totally could relate to their pain, as they say. But basically, when you're talking about an entity attachment, and let me give my little disclaimer here, because I'm often asked this when I give this presentation at conferences. If you are on an investigation, you know, if you're on a investigation of a site, the chances of having an entity attached to you just by casual contact is, I'm going to say, virtually impossible.
Okay.
So, you know, so you can't, you know, so if you go to an insane asylum, you're not going to go home with an entity attached to you. Now, they might follow you and hang around for a while and try to get your attention, but they're not attached. I mean, an entity attachment is really a separate breed.
Okay.
And so, you know, the way I segregate them is that a ghost hangs out in a room. You know, they might hang out in a location. They might follow you home. They might become more obvious, you know, or show themselves more because of where you're living, whatever. We can talk about that more later. When you start talking about an attached entity, however, you're talking about a being, so a ghost-like character, you know, so a disembodied soul that has entered the auric field. And the auric field is our personal space. It's the electromagnetic field around our body. With it being our personal space, it's our space, and they really don't respect our boundaries and will actually enter into the field, which in my mind makes them be kind of worse than ghosts, because at least ghosts stay in the room and don't penetrate the auric field. When things enter our auric field, when emotional energy enters the auric field, when another person's energy enters the auric field, automatically we assume that it is us. We assume it's our energy. We assume that it's our feelings. We assume that it's our thoughts. It's just natural. And so when the entity enters into the auric field, we take on or can take on its thoughts and emotions and then try to play them out, or we'll react to things based on their energy.
Now, we had a question here from Soul Family Reunion out in the chat room. Wants to know how to tell if you have one attached to you, but I'm going to proceed that with, you know, and I probably this is where you were going, is how does that process happen that they identify you and walk into your auric field?
They don't just walk into our auric field. We invite them in.
Ah.
We invite them inadvertently, not on purpose, but ultimately we invite them in. The most common way an entity gets attached to us is when we're children. And so if you are a child who has had a challenging upbringing, you know, if there was physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, that child is crying out for someone to come save them, for someone to come help them make it through this period. And obviously, it's not the parents who are going to do this for them. And so with them open, wanting help, the entity will come in. And the entity will give them strength. It might make it so that the child becomes very angry, you know, but that's the emotional energy that the entity is feeding off of. It might make the child go into a very deep victim space. It might make the child be resistant. It might make the child take on an attitude of, I don't care, you know, or you can't hurt me. You know, and they're seen as defense mechanisms, but many times it's the entity that is bolstering that kind of negative emotional energy in the child.
Now, is that almost like a permanent thing? And so let's say you're a child, and 20 years later, will you have the same entity there, or does it lose interest after a certain point?
That's a great question. Let me start this piece this way. When an entity is attached to us, in most cases, and we can talk about this part later, you know, there are people that have what we would classify as psychological issues that I believe are directly associated with entity attachment, but not counting that group. Okay, so we're just going to push that, you know, for the regular person. The entity will come into our space when we call it, quote unquote, and then leave it when we are strong enough to push it back out. So as an example, something happens, you know, and now my feelings are hurt. And those hurt feelings create an emotion in me, which is kind of like that one button on the bat phone that calls the entity. And it says, hey, come over here. You know, she's experiencing this emotion.
Mm-hmm.
He comes into your auric field, and so now you're in this pattern of energy. And so until you can shift out of that pattern, the entity, because he's feeding off of you, so he don't want to go, will stay. And so that could be for a few hours. It could be for a week. Can I share a quick story?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I was working at this one job when I still had a day job, and the company I was working for was having a potluck. And my husband at the time and I both worked at the company. And for the potluck, I was going to make this giant pan of baked beans. And when I make baked beans, I mean, I make baked beans. I don't mess around. There's like ground sausage and ham and bacon. And I mean, these are like killer baked beans. And so I already spent like $15 just on meat to stick in these baked beans, only to have the secretary, who I didn't like, say to me, "Oh, well, since, you know, you're two separate people, you have to bring two separate things." So this guy over here is bringing four little one-liter bottles of soda, and we have to bring two separate things? I was pissed. And I'll tell you what, George jumped right in my space. Boom. And I was a bitch for a week, let me tell you. And then one day, somebody said, made this joke, told a joke. It wasn't even a good joke. And I laughed, and it was like this cloud opened up around me, and I was me again.
So that's how it works. I mean, it
yeah.
It's funny. I'm unmarried now, but I was married 10 years ago, and during that it was a very tumultuous time for me, and there was a let's just say my wife had a substance abuse problem. And it was a lot of the reason I left. And there was a point at which we could not speak to each other without a big fight going on. And I started noticing that there were things happening around the house. 3 in the morning, I woke up one morning, and the can opener was running itself and dancing literally across the drain board by itself. And I had to unplug it to get it to stop. And we had other things, the pots and pans. We would actually be in a fight, and the pots and pans would fly open, fly right out of the cupboards, and things would come crashing out, and nobody was near it. And so just what you were saying there sounds to me like an entity had basically made its presence known right in the middle of all that. It just seems, do they take advantage of even things like that, like marital strife?
It could, I said the most common way of attachment is from childhood. The most obvious form of attachment are with people that have substance abuse issues or abuse issues. Doesn't even have to be substance abuse. Gambling addiction. I had one client who was the mom of this guy, whose son had a computer addiction, and the entity would attach to him, and he would start going to these conspiracy theory sites and was feeding off of this guy's paranoia. And the more paranoid he became, the more he became engrossed in the computer. And the more he became engrossed into the computer, the more the more it sunk in on him. And, the mom's like, "Well, what do I do?" It's like, take his computer away, take away his internet, I don't know, something. But they, like I said, they're feeding off of that energy.
Now, the actual feeding part, this is the interesting thing to me, is emotional energy obviously is a very rich source for them then. It's and probably the more passionate, and it could be both two ways. It could be actually positive energy and negative energy, but they seem to go more for the things that are on the poorer side, if you will. Am I in the ballpark there?
Well, I would say so, but if you think about it, one, they're not respecting your boundaries. Two, they are, You know, there are spirits, ghosts, whatever, that are people that have died that have gone into the light and have chosen to come back and visit. And that happens mm-hmm. to a lot of people, you know, as far as what is, you know, happening around them. But then there is the group of earthbound spirits that have not gone into the light, and so they haven't had the opportunity to let go of their ego, to do a life review, to transcend any of the issues they might have had in life. And so if they were creepy in life, they are still going to be creepy without a body.
Yeah.
You know, they got issues, and they are looking to get their thrill or continue getting their thrill, you know, and if they can't create that emotional energy off of somebody directly, they're obviously getting it indirectly off of you.
So they are, how to put this, they're going to actually try to create situations to get that then. They're going to, you know, either directly or indirectly do that.
I don't know if they'll, well, when it comes to addiction issues, they definitely will sit there and lure. You know, it's like, well, you want that one more drink. Well, you know, what about this? You know, and so there is a luring process. In the earlier case, and you know, and I might be speaking off here a little bit, but my observation has more been something when it's the childhood one in particular, something happens in your life that triggers something in you and they come to your aid. You know, it's a very interesting dynamic because there's this part where they're actually coming to your aid, quote unquote, but the way they're helping you is really dysfunctional.
Yeah, there's a motive, and that they've got to be getting something out of it too. I mean, that just seems to be the whole modus operandi for this. I mean, they're obviously there's a transaction going on. It's just not good mm-hmm. for us.
Yeah, it's definitely not good for us. You know, and in those situations, it's usually as the child grows and matures and tries to heal is when they figure out that, you know, there's something going on. They're reacting to something inappropriately. You know, it's like things are going along good and somebody gives you this sideways look and the next thing you know, you're on this rampage that you don't even know where it came from. It's because
yeah.
it didn't come from you. It came from the entity.
Now, you know, it's funny. I have a father who had a stroke 2 years ago. And repeatedly I've gotten, you know, information from various sources, including some of my own, because I run a paranormal team myself. And I've been told through some of the work I've done that there's basically higher spirits, higher beings that come in to protect people like, you know, my father, who is basically open to some of these influences. And so people who are sick, you know, and they have actually a mental deficit or, you know, in the case you're talking about, like, you know, substance abusers, they really are like multiple people. And I've noticed that with my father. It's very noticeable sometimes. And, but, you know, it's, and I remember it, you know, in my wife's case, that sort of flash anger point. It was like dealing with, there were actually three Kellys, and you never knew which one you were going to get, you know?
Mm-hmm.
and
exactly.
It just, yeah, and I think I really was dealing with three of them, and watching what my father goes through, we've been able to get you know, the medication worked out and all that, but I actually got an EVP through basically a Frank's box that we use in our group that said he was being protected, and I didn't even get asked this question. It just came out and said, we're working with your father and protecting him. So in your experience, are there higher energies that recognize these things and actually will assist, you know, we who do this kind of, like in your case, the house healing?
I have not investigated that in particular, like that answer, to give you an answer in particular, But I mean, there are the angels, there are spirit guides that come around us and protect us from all kinds of things that could possibly happen to us in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, so it definitely is a possibility.
Now, you know, what about these different, you know, in the book you covered all the different types of entities out there. So maybe a good review for the audience is to, you know, from, you know, the low on up to the high would be in order.
Okay. Actually, I like starting at the high because I think it makes more sense.
Okay. All right.
You know, so if you start at the highest level, you know, we're talking about angels. And when you think about angels, they are filled with love and compassion and joy. And so their emotional vibration is at the high extreme end of love, you know, or, you know, emotional energy.
Yeah.
When you kind of come down the spectrum, you know, you move into the area of the spirit guide. Now, it is believed, okay, and I'm saying it that way specifically, it is believed that angels have never incarnated on the earth. Okay, with that said, you move down to the area of spirit guides, it's like still very high vibrating, still filled with love and compassion, maybe not as much as the angels, but many times they have incarnated on the physical realm and have chosen to work with people, you know, to support them in their work and their endeavors.
Yeah.
Moving down further from that is what I, you know, where I start classifying ghosts, which are also beings without bodies, you know, and, you know, when you think about people and like socioeconomic structure, you can talk about people being in the middle class, but there is a pretty vast range between people in the upper middle class and their life and lifestyle and people in the lower middle class and their life and lifestyle. And so when you're talking about ghosts, you can have really nice ghosts like Casper, or you can have not so nice ghosts because they've got some issues that they need to work on.
Yeah.
One of the things, you know, one of the things about ghosts is that they stay out of the auric field. You know, so they might be nasty and they might do stuff around your house and throw things around and turn on lights or blow up light bulbs or whatever, but they stay out of your auric field. Moving down the ladder from that is where you get to the attached entities, you know, and I put them into a worse category because they're really a lot more ego-based. You know, so one end of the vibration is love. The other end of the vibration is greed and ego and me, 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 me. And so when you're getting into the attached end of the area, you're really moving into work dealing with a group of entities that are really ego-based and they don't care and they'll cross your boundaries and try to feed off of you or control you or, you know, get something from you.
Now,
moving, go ahead.
Were any of these in the attached entities category, were any of these ever incarnated?
Yes. They all have been incarnated. Yes,
okay.
They all take on physical form.
All right.
Moving down, there is a group of, I call them alien entities. They're kind of interesting. They may or may not enter the auric field, although what they want is control. They do not take on corporeal form, and so when you interface with them, they might look like a weasel. They might, you know, I had one client who had what I called the devil guy, who looked kind of like the Torch from the Fantastic Four. He just had these flames all over himself.
I remember that.
You know, cool. They take on all kinds of weird shapes and forms and whatever, but they don't take on human form. And so interacting with them is a little bit challenging because they don't have the same frame of reference as that we do. And so you know, what seems normal and moral and right to us might not be normal and moral and right to them, because it's not from the same base. So that you have your alien entity group, and then the final group are what I call demons. Now, there are a lot of people, you know, especially in more religious circles, who would consider any kind of entity attachment a possession and being affected by a demon. You know, and I don't necessarily agree with or disagree with what they're saying, because the person is being controlled or manipulated by an external factor. That's not nice. But there actually are alien entities that will occupy a human form, you know, regular entities or alien entities that will actually step into the body and take it over, or try to take it over and exert control that way, which is where you get your full-blown possessions.
Now, aliens, you know, I work in the propulsion industry. I've been around science my whole life, and I do, you know, amateur astronomy, that kind of thing. And, you know, I'm big on the whole subject of, multi-dimensional realities, multiverses, that kind of thing. Is that where these things come from, these alien entities? Is this basically them able to cross into our universe, and they're finding an interest in us, and they're using us for whatever purpose?
That's my take on what they're doing here. I mean, like I said, it's a little hard communicating with them, because as I said in the book, they don't quote-unquote speak English. They don't speak human. And so trying to figure out, you know, since we don't have any matching pictures, I mean, that's the word I use, you know, matching experiences of life here on Earth, it's really hard to communicate with them intuitively.
Yeah, it's just, it's funny because in one of the books I just recently read, TAPS had their second book out. And Jay and Grant were talking about a case that they had where they actually got video footage of these things actually materializing in a home where there was a haunt going on. And they were just as shocked as everybody else to see these entities, you know, popping in. And actually on video, they got them. And they looked just like the grays that, you know, we've all heard about. So, obviously, these things have been around a long time. This is not just some new phenomenon. It's been reported for, you know, centuries. So, you know, whatever their purpose is here, I don't know that they're all that good for you, but they must be getting something from us. I just wonder what it would be. I still find it mysterious after 30 years looking at this.
I don't know what they want, but, you know, any being that is going to try to get something from us, control us, manipulate us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is not healthy and not good in my book and needs to go.
Yeah, it makes you wonder is it so bad where they're at that they have to come over here and pick on us? I mean, I just wonder what in their makeup makes it like that. But obviously, they seem to think it's okay. You know, maybe it's an example of a world where science has gone bad, and they just don't have any regard for us as emotional beings. You know, and I've come to believe that more and more as I've studied this.
You know, but if you are a believer in the abduction phenomena, it's like, they don't care about us anyway. You know, we're just little lab rats to them. So, you know, picking us up in a ship or attaching to us, you know, energetically, I don't see that they would really see that as a big deal or a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, the lab rat analogy is, you know, time-tested in a lot of discussions about this, and I would agree with that. I think it's they are a scientific type of species, and they're probably feeling that they have every right to just go around and do whatever they want. you know, unfortunately, I think you're right in your classification. They're right just above, you know, a demonic level in terms of what they are. But, you know, it's funny, you know, having grown up in the business, you know, of, you know, rocketry and propulsion and defense, I've heard the stories and, you know, talking about how our government is very aware of these things. And we've actually gotten somewhat good at, you know, detecting them and actually, you know, engaging them somewhat militarily, if you will. So there's been a lot of discussion on these points. But, yeah, you were mentioning that you were going into the demonic. And this is an area I kind of am a little skittish when I go into the field. And I've got my team out there. And I've always heard that there's that 1 in 100 case you're going to run into something. So, you know, that's probably a good lead-in. What are these things? What is the demonic entity, and how, where do they rank in the scheme of things, and what do they do? What's their purpose?
Oh, and I will just be totally upfront with you. I have only ever encountered one.
Okay.
One. They are that rare. I mean, my experience has been is that it is a alien entity, so it's an entity that really doesn't care, you know, about anything, that has not just entered the auric field, but has actually entered into the physical body.
So it's almost like a walk-in.
But not, because it doesn't take over the mental consciousness of the person.
Okay.
It's a very weird and strange phenomena.
So it's almost like having two of you parked in the same place and there's somewhat of a battle for control going on.
Right. Very much so. And when you sit there and look at it, it ain't human. At all. I mean, because a walk-in, I mean, if you think about it, you know, a walk-in can take over the body because it's had a body. You know, that soul has had a body in the past, and it can interact with people on the physical plane because it's done it before.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I have encountered a lot of, not that this has anything to do with ghosts or anything, is that there is a wave of spirits, people, beings that have been incarnating on this planet not that long. And so every so often I'll do a session with someone and they don't feel comfortable in their own skin and they're missing something but they don't know why. And they don't feel like they fit in with other people. And when you look at them and you start looking at their history on Earth, they've only had one or two incarnations or three incarnations. And the fewer they have, the more uncomfortable they are. And when you make a comment to them like, well, you're not really from this planet, they'll go, that so makes sense to me. I swear to God, I cross my heart, hope to die. It validates their feelings of discomfort. But somebody that's a walk-in is very comfortable here.
Now, what exactly is a walk-in? I mean, for the audience here. And,
a walk-in is a soul that takes over the body of someone else. My personal belief is that it's not a very frequent occurrence, although there are a lot of people that will say, well, you know, I have a walk-in. It's like, well, how do you know? But you know, that's neither here nor there. Usually when a walk-in will take possession, the original spirit that inhabited the body or the person, blah, blah, blah.
I do that myself.
The person is usually, there's something going on. Usually the person is very sick or there's, you know, or very close to death, and the soul that's in the body decides it wants to check out and another soul will actually step into the body and take it over.
Now, is that like an agreement that they have? Is it just an individual decision on the soul that walks in, or is there a higher, you know, plan at work there?
Could be. I do believe that that happens. But I think that the cases of it happening are so rare, you know, except for the people that run around. It's like, well, I'm a walk-in. It's like,
how do you know? Yeah, it's funny. I mean, having dealt with a stroke patient as closely as I have, you know, it went from being, my father was a very, very, you know, well-known engineer and a scientist, and he went from being that to this completely different person. But would I call him a walk-in? I don't think so. I think it's just the damage changed who he is. The soul is still the same in there. But okay. I think you're right. I think it doesn't happen as often as people think, but there are those unique cases where somebody's, you know, you can tell when you walk in and you feel a person, you know them, you know the way they are, and they do that something that completely, you know, they just change in their mannerisms and everything, and it just is, it's very strange, you know. I've only heard of it in just a few cases where it was actually pretty well agreed. Yeah, that's a walk-in. You know. Yeah.
I mean, if you kind of look at it from a different perspective, from the perspective of someone who has multiple personality disorder, person who has multiple personality disorder is an individual who has multiple entities attached to them. And if you watch any of, like, the TV shows about, you know, that happen to have something about, you know, multiple personalities, not like the documentaries because they don't know what they're talking about, in my opinion. But some of these other shows, it's like something will happen to the person that triggers a response in them, and the appropriate responding personality will actually come in and take over. So there's always a triggering event, and it will bring in the entity who can best handle that situation.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense, because my grandfather was a neurosurgeon, and he was also on the State Board of Directors of Mental Health for the state of California. And he did a lot of testimony in cases where they were criminally insane. And, you know, you see a lot of that kind of thing, you know, especially in mental institutions. And I really believe strongly that a lot of these cases that you see in mental institutions, you know, people with multiple personalities, you know, strange behaviors, that kind of thing, I think there are a lot more attachment disorders that are going on than people realize, even the people, you know, who are supposedly trained, you know, in classical medical, you know, science. It's there's much more to the picture than what they're seeing. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, I totally agree. You know, but one of the things about the individual with the multiple personality disorder is that when the new personality is in the body, it's a different person. I mean, they've done scientific studies, and their blood pressure is different. Their eyesight can be different. One can have diabetes while the other one doesn't. I mean, there's all of these changes that happen. You know, and so kind of going back to the walk-in scenario, you know, you can't be the same person and just, you know, have a life-altering experience and have, you know, now be a walk-in. I mean, there would be a discernible difference between who you were and who you are now.
I mean, that touches on something that really is striking to me in these cases, is where you have these changes in the physiology that are very real. I mean, just like you said, diabetes. And then, you know, they go to the next person and it's not there. Well, what does that say about disease? You know?
It makes you go, hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it just is amazing that they could go from being, you know, that in a heartbeat to a completely different entity. That's why, you know, the cases I've read about where it was pretty much agreed that this was a walk-in, it's just such a, you know, people that have been exposed to it say that it feels like a different person. You know, the feeling you get around them even is just so different, and it's undeniable, you know.
No, I agree. I totally agree. And unless, you know, I don't see why the person, the walk-in person, would just sit there and say that they were a walk-in. I don't know. Just that whole thing doesn't make any sense. You know, but there is also... This is one of my little metaphysical pet peeves. You know, they're also the people that, you know, will say, well, you know, during my past life in Atlantis, when I was this, and, you know, on Thursday night I did that, and it's just like, okay, gotta go.
Do you think that people can access their past lives? I mean, yeah. If they
I do think that they can. Totally.
How does that work? I mean, is it hypnotic regression, or is there more to it?
No, usually they're accessed through hypnotic regression. Sometimes we'll just have flashes into past lives, and, you know, we might go somewhere that might trigger a past life memory, or we might meet somebody that we knew in a past life, and we'll get flashes from that life, and you don't know why, you know, you just start thinking about something, and, you know, but that is the past life memory trying to come up. You know, a lot of the times they're not big memories, you know, it's not all of this information per se, but it's just these little flashes. Like, I had this friend Michael years ago who...
Yeah.
Actually, I had this friend, Tom, who is my best friend I knew him since junior high school. And so he had this friend, Michael. And I used to go out dancing in clubs. I love to dance. And so Tom introduced me to Michael. And I'll tell you what, we were like best friends within a minute. And we were just blah, 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 blah. Every time I looked at him, I just kept seeing this image of he and I, except it wasn't he and I, we were two girls, in this, like, oversized feather bed in the South, you know, with the window open, like, and this curtain blowing, you know, softly in the wind. I mean, I don't even know why I would have that image, but he was in that image with me. The feeling of him was in that image with me, of the two of us sitting in this bed, blah, 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 blah.
Now, did he have the same sort of feelings? Did he feel the same sorts of, you know, impulses?
I mean, he definitely felt like, you know, we had been connected together before. I mean, I didn't really talk to him about the bed picture. You know, but I mean, he definitely recognized that there was this instant and very deep connection between the two of us that was not explainable.
Do you think that people like that, that you've been around in the past, that we kind of seem to have if you view life as a river of eddies and currents, do we tend to kind of be stuck around the same people for part of the ride, you know, from life to life? I mean, is that something that is kind of just the way things work out?
I mean, I think that we cycle through patterns, you know, and people and events throughout our life. Yeah. You know, I mean, there are some people that are like, well, I was your mom and then I was your child, and I'm not so sure about that. But we definitely do cycle, you know, with people, you know, whether it's continuous lifetimes or, you know, we just kind of like keep bumping into each other kind of thing.
Yeah. It just seems like that's the one thing I look at in all this. I mean, you've tied together, you know, the whole structure of, you know, the entities and things like that, the things that happen to people and all that. But the question I look at and I keep going back to this, you know, because I've been, you know, I do science myself. On the other hand, I've grown up pretty confused because I'm psychic myself. And I look at the universe and I just ask, why? What is the purpose of all this? And it, when you think about it, you know, there's this whole spectrum of these entities that we've run into. You know, I do this in my work, and, you know, you obviously are doing this, many similar things. You know, do you believe that there's a much higher entity beyond angels, even, if you want to call it God or whatever, that has this all pretty well moving along the way he, she, it, all that is? There's a purpose to this.
I mean, I do believe that there's a purpose to all of this, but I think that the purpose to all of this is so beyond anything that we could possibly understand in our little feeble minds, that even, you know, not that I know what it is, because if I knew the answers to the meaning of life, I'd either be a millionaire or locked up somewhere, you know. But I do believe that there is a lot going on that we're not even privy to.
That's what I've always thought. I look at it from, you know, I know I hit you with a really trick question there, but it was just, I was just feeling where you were at on it. I agree. I mean, I look at the religions of the world, and they're real good for a lot of folks, and I don't denigrate them, but I look at the subject of God, and I always come to the same place. Yeah, this is so much bigger than we could ever think. You know, we have to put on rose-colored glasses just to try to make sense of it. And yet, I know that something created all of this. Something created, you know, angels, all the way down to, you know, these things that, you know, aliens and, you know, the things we call demons and whatever. This whole continuum has a purpose, and whatever that is just way outside of our understanding that we'll ever have. But it doesn't keep us from asking. You know, I think it's fun to try to figure out what it all means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't. Yeah, it's just. The thing I keep running into is it's all about love. That's all I can come up with.
Well, but if you think about it, our reptilian brain is based on response. You know, and so the fear response is a very easy reaction for us to have. And to trust and to experience love is something that's outside of our little window. And so to move us into that higher level vibration, because fear obviously is a lower level, more constricting emotional energy, you know, is what many theologians and philosophers alike say it, you know, our experience here on Earth is all about.
Yeah, I heard one of them, one of those people, say something about fear, and I always loved it. It was that fear really stood for false evidence against reality. And I just thought that was the greatest, because it really, you know, most people's fears are easily punctured when you show them, you know, stop and think about it. And, you know, the media is just feeding off of us all the time with that. That's what they market, you know, day in, day out, is, you know, all the things that could go wrong. And, you know, I've brought it up on the show a few times that, you know, 98.9% of humanity is walking around just worried about going to work and loving their kids and going out and enjoying life, you know, rather than deal with all this stuff that's being thrown at us. So it's, I don't know. I just find the idea of, you know, just putting out a little bit of love out there and enjoying yourself to be much more appealing.
But, you know, when we're in a place of fear, we're much easily controlled. They can control us easier. You know, and that's the sad part, you know, is that there are people out there that are looking to control us. You know, it makes me laugh. You know, I like watching, like, History Channel and Discovery Channel and Science Channel and all those type shows. And you watch a show about, you know, meteors hitting the Earth, and it's like, And it could happen one day. Maybe next week. You just don't know. And it's just like, my God, you took this great show and just had to, like, put this fear twist into it, didn't you? It's like, I don't understand it.
Well, you know, I'll say this. I mean, knowing, you know, what I know about astronomy and the sort of energy levels involved in something like that, like you said, a meteor hits the Earth, you mean an asteroid coming in. At the point that that's going to happen, you know you're going to reincarnate again. So, okay, I'll go buy a beer and watch the show. You know, what else is there to do? Enjoy it.
To me, the joke is that they would probably know a good 5 to 10 years in advance that there was something heading our way.
Actually, it's funny. Back in 1989, I was really, really involved in amateur astronomy, and I was doing commentary. I was looking for comets. And we had one that came out of the north, basically not too far from the North Star, came in, and it was on us before we knew it. And there was literally a period of days. It passed the Earth within 200,000 miles of the planet, which is very, very, actually not 200,000, 2 million miles. And that's right within the boundary of possibly hitting us. So we very nearly got hit. And it's just by a whisker that we missed being hit by this thing, which would have, you know, exceeded all the nuclear stockpiles combined if it had hit. So, what I'm saying is it's just, this stuff can happen, and it can happen very quickly. We would most likely not even know it hit us, or have.
Well, I guess that's good to hear, because I always watch those shows and go, that's a bunch of crap. They'll know way in advance. So.
I hate to break it to you. It can happen. It can happen very quickly. There would only be days. A lot of the science in that movie Armageddon was right on the money. I mean, and even some of the techniques that were involved have been discussed. I mean, I've dealt with folks with NASA and things like that, and those are all real. Those are on the board, drawing boards to actually what to do, and it could actually happen very quickly. You know what? We're only 3 minutes away from the end. I've had a ball talking with you. You're a great guest.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to finish out Dark Angels, and I just wanted to mention your other books. You had, let me see here. You had also an Insider's. Avoiding the Cosmic Tube Life. Where I've got to get that. I just love the title, and The Power Within. And I've got the links for those out on the main page for the show tonight. And is there anything coming up for you that you've got to pop out there?
I have to tell you, while I'm digging here looking for this thing, all right, so this is like totally probably politically incorrect, but on Facebook there is a page that is called "Can This Poodle Wearing a Tinfoil Hat Get More Fans Than Glenn Beck?" Now, not that I care about Glenn Beck, or what they're really posting on the site. However, my dog is the poodle with the tinfoil hat. I found her on their page this morning. And so if you go to Facebook and visit the Poodle Wearing the Tinfoil Hat page, become a fan. Vote for Bitsy, who's called Bob. But... it's just too funny. She has 211,000 fans. I only wish I was so popular.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm serious.
It's funny. Okay. You know how synchronicity is? It's we have a cat named Biddy.
Oh, really?
Well, I'll tell you what. We will instruct the audience to go look for a tinfoil hat, poodle wearing a tinfoil hat, and know it's your dog.
It's my baby.
All right. Well, and your website
is soulhealer.com.
Okay, and I'll tell you what, I'd love to have you back carry on some of these discussions, because you are a very intelligent lady, and you've been around the block
a
couple of times.
Well, and I'd love to come back, and I'd be on time.
Okay, well, you did great, Hill. I'm just glad I was sitting there winging it a little bit, but Hey, we got 30 seconds left, you know, before I got to start winding. A fascinating discussion, and I'm going to finish out the book, and I'll definitely set some time up and talk with Ira, a very nice man, and you know, get things all set up here again to have you back again in a month or two, if you are up
Sounds
for that.
Sounds perfect.
So. Okay, well, with that said, thank you very much for coming on, Doctor, and we will be talking with you again. Real quick, we have our lurkers out there, and we also have Anastasia, Disgruntled Dan. We had Kathy, who's getting ready to, because we're moving into the next show, and I'm going to do some EVP stuff with her and talk a little more astronomy. And Karen over in Phoenix, Arizona, and we have Soul Family Reunion. And a few of the others that were popping in and out, I saw them all. So we will be seeing you guys for the next show. I've got the ovulus out, by the way, too. We'll probably do a little ovulus work, see if we could call a spirit or two in. So with that said, we're gonna wind it down. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio signing off. And thanks a lot, Rita. It was good to meet you.
You too.
Okay. Right,
check out Bitsy.
You too. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Right.